This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, May 28th, 2013. I'm Ren Green.
And I'm Alex Ward. Alta Bikeshare is a local company with offices across the company. Across the country, but this environmentally aware, people-powered business is in the middle of a labor action that has brought attention to the frustration of some of its workers. Don Merrill talked with Samuel Swenson, a former employee, about the situation at Alta Bikeshare outlets here and in Washington, D.C.
This action that some of the employees of Alta Bikeshare are taking against the company, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
It's really simple. Alta signed a contract with the district government. It's a federal contract, and in the contract they agreed to pay good prevailing wages, they're called, and they agreed to pay health and welfare benefits to all workers, regardless of part-time, full-time, temporary status, anything like that. This is all based on something called the Service Contract Act, so they just signed to comply with the law for the labor provisions of a federal contract. What's been happening for the last 3 years is that Alta has not been playing by the rules. They got a lot of federal money, a big boon to their program, and the workers haven't been getting the wages, and they haven't been getting hardly any of the benefits that were promised in the contract.
Mr. Swenson said he filed an action with the Department of Labor many months ago. And only after a set of follow-up phone calls was he able to get the Department of Labor to reopen the case after they had said it was closed.
And in the spring, they said, your case looks promising, and they were very optimistic. And shortly afterwards, they called me to say, we're dropping your case because the Department of Transportation has retroactively canceled the contract. And that just sounded really suspicious to me. And, you know, I'm from Chicago. I was living in D.C. I know a lot about corrupt government. And so I did what you do, which is try and get some sunlight in the situation. I called the Washington Post. Their reporter started asking around, and suddenly everyone changed their tune. The Department of Labor reopened the investigation. The Department of Transportation said, no, we're not canceling the contract. And Alta started saying measured but cooperative things.
Mr. Swenson says that although the federal government is involved, he doesn't expect they will be the ones to lead to a solution between Alta Bikeshare and the disgruntled employees. He thinks it will come down to owner Mia Burke doing what he calls the right thing.
There's an opportunity here for Mia Burke and for the Alta companies to be leaders in providing green jobs. And it's very simple for them because all they have to do is follow the law that they already agreed to follow, and they'll be providing good green jobs in D.C.
So do you have any idea how long this process will take before you and Alta Bikeshare come to some kind of agreement?
It's been a couple years, but I think that this is going to be a breakthrough moment.
I'm Don Merrill, KBOO News.
3,000 Nike garment workers in Cambodia were attacked by police wielding electronic batons on Monday. At least 23 women were injured by the so-called stun batons, which are similar to cattle prods used by industrial farm companies. The 3,000 women involved in the protest work in a factory sewing and piecing together apparel and sportswear for Nike. They are asking for an additional $14 a month, in addition to their $74 a month in wages. The women say they need an additional $14 to cover their rent, transportation, and health care expenses. With their current wage, the women say they end up going into debt since they are unable to pay for both food and rent with just $74 a month. Nike Corporation did not return calls from KBOO News asking for comment. The company did email a statement to KBOO News saying that they are continuing to closely monitor the situation. In the past, the company has stated that they are not responsible for conditions in the factories of their subcontractors, despite the fact that virtually all of their products are manufactured by subcontractors.
The Beaverton School District is making an effort to place 151 new teachers this fall. Previously, the district placed new hires in classrooms without consideration of past experience. Some were placed in positions teaching grade levels in which they had no prior experience. Last year, a woman with 20 years of experience teaching kindergarten was put in a special education classroom without having had any experience with special needs children. This year, principals say they will review the list of teachers and make suggestions for where they believe each one will be the most effective. The chief human resources officer for the Beaverton School District claims that while they will not be able to make everyone happy, they will try to correct the most extreme misplacements of teachers.
A committee of the Oregon Board of Higher Education has approved tuition hikes of nearly 5% for Oregon's public universities next year. The Finance and Administration Committee of the Board has recommended tuition increases averaging 4.8% across all seven state universities. The increases will average around 4.5% total, including fees, as some schools were able to reduce their fees. The tuition and fee increases at Portland State University will be 4.5%. Students enrolled with 15 credits will pay nearly $300 more per term. Oregon State University will increase tuition by 5.9%, or almost $400 a term for full-time students. The Board of Higher Education says the increases are necessary due to increased enrollment, retirement, and health care costs, as well as a decrease in state funding. The cost of retirement for teachers and staff is up by 15% over the last 5 years. The cost of health care has increased by more than 16%. The tuition hikes will be reviewed by the board in June and will likely be given final approval this time next month.
Portland Public Schools held a summit from 1 to 5 this afternoon asking community members for input on their upcoming $480 million construction project. Last November, voters passed the largest local government in Oregon history to renovate or rebuild Franklin, Grant, and Roosevelt High Schools. The construction for Roosevelt and Franklin is scheduled for 2015, while Grant's will begin in 2017. Several other schools such as Alameda, Bridal Mile, and Laurelhurst have already begun to receive roof, seismic, and handicap accessibility updates. The district says that the input from the public will help them design the upcoming renovations and new buildings.
A student at West Albany High School in Albany, Oregon, will be arraigned on Tuesday to face charges of attempted aggravated murder and possession of destructive devices. Grant Accord, age 17, will be charged as an adult. Authorities acting on a tip-off from a 911 caller found explosive devices under Accord's floorboards, including pipe bombs, Molotov cocktails, a Drano bomb, and a napalm bomb. Accord's mother, Marianne Fox, disclosed that he has pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders associated with streptococcal infections, or PANDAS, a type of obsessive-compulsive disorder triggered by strep throat or scarlet fever. Children with PANDAS are known to undergo violent, agitated mood swings. Fox expressed solidarity with other parents of children with the condition, but acknowledged the need for law enforcement to keep the community safe. In addition to the bombs, authorities found a timeline and a checklist for a school attack modeled on the 1999 Columbine Massacre. A sweep of the school found no explosives, and students returned to their classes today.
OHSU is closer to an AIDS vaccine than they have been in the last several years. KBOO's Don Merrill talked with Joshua Sasha, one of the scientists that has been working on the progress of the vaccine since starting to work under lead researcher Dr. Lewis Picker 2 years ago.
I was reading it today in the Portland Business Journal about how OHSU says it's close to an HIV vaccine. Can you talk a little bit about that?
It's always best to preface this by saying being careful and saying that we're not close, but we have made a roadmap, a very detailed roadmap of how to get there.
Now, I was sort of going back over the news stories over the last few years, and back in 2011, you guys did some testing on monkeys, and then last year you were talking about how the weakened virus in some cases helps, you know, eradicate the disease, but in other cases it doesn't. And so this year, I guess you're further along in that chain of work toward a vaccine. Is that right?
Exactly. This is all building on previous work with this this new vector, but this work that we just published is essentially going to revolutionize the field of immunology, because all vaccine approaches to date are based upon what happens to nature. You're trying to essentially recapitulate the immune response. We know that's not effective with HIV, and so with this new approach, we essentially better nature and can make a bigger, stronger response.
Now, why isn't it effective?
The problem is that with HIV, which is a retrovirus, it's very difficult, once you're infected, to get rid of the virus. because it integrates into your host, into your DNA. When that happens, it's there for life. You know, people like to say diamonds are forever, but actually retroviruses like HIV are forever. Thinking of HIV, you know, it's not just one virus, but it's what we call a swarm. So it's a series of closely related but genetically distinct viruses. And that's why one of the reasons a vaccine has not been effective is because you can target one of these individuals of the community, and then when you do that, there's hundreds of other viruses that will that vaccine won't target, and they'll be able to replicate freely.
So what has been your part in this research? I see that Dr. Picker is, I guess he's the lead researcher on this?
Yes, Dr. Picker is the lead researcher. He's actually the one who was the visionary and came up with this idea quite some years ago, and this is all building towards you know, figuring out how this vaccine vector has been so wildly successful in this animal model. You know, it's interesting because at the time I was teaching immunology at OHSU when we were coming up with these results, and as I was teaching these kids the basics of immunology, here we were producing this data in the laboratory that essentially contradicted everything you learn in an immunology textbook. And that's what makes this result so exciting. I think it's still a few years away. You know, I think as a scientist we have to be cautious with this because, you know, it has to go through preclinical trials, which is what we're doing now, and then it has to go into a small phase one clinical trial where we test safety in the human population. You know, these vaccines are all heavily regulated, and this one will be no different.
I'm Don Merrill, KBOO News.
A Portland-based hip-hop activist is in critical condition in a hospital in Indiana after he was shot by an off-duty police officer. Craig Strand, who occasionally DJed on KBOO under the name Fresh Craig, was shot in the stomach by a police officer in Merrillville, Indiana, after allegedly punching the officer and trying to disarm him. According to local media reports, Strand, who works as a long-distance truck driver, had parked his truck illegally on a private lot and was issued several parking citations by the off-duty police officer. When he saw the officer who had issued the tickets, Strand argued with him, saying that he was parked legally. The officer then tried to arrest him, at which point Strand allegedly shouted, quote, "I'm tired of you cops doing this to us." He then allegedly punched the officer several times. The Indiana police officer then pulled his gun and shot Strand in the stomach. Strand was charged in absentia today with disarming a law enforcement officer, battery resulting in bodily injury, and resisting law enforcement. He remains in critical condition in a hospital in Northwest Indiana.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Free Speech Radio News at 5:30, followed by Tune In, Turn On, and Remember, celebrating 45 years of community radio at 6. Tonight's Tune In, Turn On, and Remember welcomes Dave Lifton and Eugen Rashad as they talk about the early days of public affairs programming, hosted by Don Merrill. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. On tonight's Hard Knock Radio, host Davey D talks with United Kingdom activist Lee Jasper and the impact of violence in the UK. Tomorrow's weather forecast called for rain with a high of 61 degrees.
It's 5:18, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Outside radical groups, squawked Representative Scott Garrett at a recent Republican inquisition into a citizen's petition that's been submitted to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Garrett is foaming at the mouth on behalf of corporate chieftains who are pouring unlimited and untold amounts of their shareholders' money into our elections. The great majority of Americans agree that, at the very least, shareholders have a right to be told how much of their money is being spent on behalf of which candidates. So, more than 500,000 citizens have petitioned the SEC for such a disclosure rule. Who are these scary citizens, considered such a threat to corporate power that a Congress critter is tarring them publicly as outside radicals? They're professors from leading law schools, state and national elected officials, pension fund directors, public interest advocates, and corporate shareholders. Not exactly outsiders, much less radicals. And that's what makes them so dangerous to the autocratic elites who run corporations as their own fiefdoms. Top executives want no accountability for the hundreds of millions of shareholder dollars they're spending to elect corporate lickspittles like Garrett. Don't question us, they demand, just trust us. No. Far from earning trust, they've already wrecked our economy and betrayed our nation's egalitarian ideals while feathering their own plutocratic nests. Now they want free rein to pervert America's democratic process with clandestine election campaigns secretly financed with other people's money. This is Jim Hightower saying, no, these kleptocrats are the real radicals. It's time to stop them, not only by disclosing their thievery, but ultimately by outlawing it and returning elections to the people. To join this effort, contact Public Citizen at www.citizen.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Walmart employees walked off the job Tuesday in an effort to end retaliation against employees and to get the company to publicly commit to providing full-time work with a minimum salary of $25,000 per year. Supporters of the strike say this will give employees the chance they need to no longer rely on taxpayer-funded programs to support their families. Supporters of the strike say Walmart has attempted to silence the voices who speak against them through illegal retaliation, meritless lawsuits, and the firing of workers. Supporters from the organization United for Respect at Walmart, or Our Walmart, have been calling on the nation's largest private employer to create better jobs and filed nearly 30 federal charges against the retailer in 2012. The Walmart chain also pleaded guilty on Tuesday to improperly disposing of pollutants from their stores. The incident occurred years ago when Walmart dropped hazardous waste, such as bleach and fertilizer, into sanitation drains across California. In 2011, Walmart announced it was, quote, actively negotiating for 17 new stores in the Portland area. In Portland, there are currently two stores, one in Southeast 82nd and Holgate, and one in Raleigh Hills.
Restricting decisions to regulate our agricultural policy is what organic food advocates claim is a preemptive step by biotech companies anticipating that local governments might try to ban genetically modified organisms. Oregon Senate Bill 633, also known as a state-level Monsanto Protection Act, was approved in the Senate earlier this month, but has to undergo a mirrored process in the House before getting signed into law by Governor Kitzhaber. Founder and executive director of Food Democracy Now, Dave Murphy, spoke with KBOO's Robin Ryan about the bill, the threat it poses to the state's organic farmers, and the restrictions placed on local governments that might attempt to regulate the growth and distribution of GMOs.
It's a very poorly written and very broadly written bill, and it's designed, I mean, you're basically taking a sledgehammer to legislation here. It's very broad. It would prohibit any local laws or measures, basically, from regulating growing or harvesting or distribution, labeling, and marketing of food and agriculture and planting. It could impact Christmas trees, the sale, and, harvesting Christmas trees. It can definitely impact a lot of different industries and sales of trees and horticultural products in the state of Oregon and really go outside of what it's intended to do is protect the biotech industry.
What can you tell me about the politicians who sponsored the bill?
The leading sponsor of SB 633 in the Senate was Arnie Roblin, who is a Democrat from Coos Bay. You know, it's pretty disappointing that the members of the Oregon Senate went along with that by such margin.
There were marches in 9 different cities in this state over the weekend. And I'm just wondering how a politician justifies doing the corporate bidding when it's clear that the voting constituents stand opposed to the policies of this corporation. How do they explain that?
I would say it's getting very difficult, if not impossible, for elected officials to reasonably justify supporting Monsanto, allowing Monsanto and biotech companies to continue to write the rules and regulations of the U.S. and state government. It's appalling. People are outraged, not only in America, but across the world. It was incredible to watch the march against Monsanto unfold. I mean, over 400 cities. That's remarkable. Just a stunning condemnation of the company. They have no respect for America's farmers. They have no respect for America's laws. And I just say the American people have had enough of it, and our elected officials better wake up before it's too late. The significant problem is a very flawed technology with genetic engineering. And this is a call, an activization for our elected officials to wake up. And I know there's a bunch of geo-labeling bills in the state of Oregon, and hopefully your elected officials will have the courage to pass them.
Can you tell me what recourse remains for any effort to block this legislation?
We're in a street fight. Oregon is on the front lines of this in the way that California was last year. Oregon is trying to protect its family farmers from protecting their crops from genetic contamination. Right now, SB 633 has passed in the Senate, is currently in the House. It hasn't been assigned to the committee. So if you're in Oregon, you need to contact your House representative's member and let them know that you're appalled that any elected official is trying to give another corporate handout to a company like Monsanto, and you're going to hold them accountable. I mean, our elected officials have gotten away with this for too long, and they need to be held accountable.
For folks interested in learning more about your organization, this bill, and what they can do, talk about your organization. How long has it been around? What's the charter?
We're a grassroots movement of more than 600,000 farmers and everyday citizens who are dedicated to helping reform food and agriculture. We think it's important at Food Rationale to have an informed public who's not only cares about organic food, but also wants to support family farmers at farmers markets, buys local foods, shops at co-ops, and buys organic. We're here based in Iowa, and we've been working on, you know, various issues like antitrust enforcement, the Department of Justice and the USDA, and also promoting provisions in the Farm Bill that support organics and support family farmers to protect them from unfair one-size-fits-all legislation.
For KBO News, this is Robin Ryan.
A computer hacker who helped leak emails from the Stratford private intelligence firm pled guilty in New York court today. KBO's Jenka Soderberg has more.
Jeremy Hammond pleaded guilty today to a single count of conspiracy to engage in computer hacking for his role in the 2011 Stratford breach. Hammond and his two British counterparts were members of LulzSec and AntiSec, which are offshoots of the global hacker network known as Anonymous. 3 years ago, they copied thousands of Stratford's internal documents and emails, including details of Stratford's spying on Bhopal activists at the behest of Dow Chemical, and the monitoring of Occupy Wall Street activists by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Some emails later appeared on the WikiLeaks website. Earlier this month, two British hackers were also sentenced for their parts in the security breach. The longest of those sentences was 14 months. Hammond faces up to 10 years in prison, even with his guilty plea. He had previously been facing 5 felony charges in connection with the Stratford breach, including 3 under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, or CFAA. Written in 1984, the CFAA provides harsh penalties for behavior that critics say is sometimes not much different from normal web browsing. Hani Fakhouri is a staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, an internet freedom group which has challenged the harsh sentencing guidelines in place under the CFAA.
Well, I think one of the big problems is it is a law that envisioned a particular scenario, which is this kind of war games, if you remember the movie with Matthew Broderick from the 1980s, this war game scenario where these young hackers are inadvertently or intentionally, rather, starting World War III by hacking into the government's missile network and launching missile strikes. So that's what was in Congress's mind when they wrote the law. But what's happened is the law has been broadened and expanded to cover all sorts of behavior that, with modern computing as it exists today, where people are constantly connected to the internet, using computers, smartphones, where they've taken the law to a place where it's far broader than it was originally envisioned, and it covers far more types of behavior than was originally envisioned.
In March, Andrew Arnheimer, known online as Weave, was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison under the CFAA. Arnheimer had given the Gawker website details of a security hole on AT&T's website that publicly revealed the email addresses of iPad users. Reddit website co-founder and information activist Aaron Schwartz, who committed suicide in January, was facing decades in prison under the CFAA for allegedly downloading freely available documents from the academic database JSTOR. Hani Fakhouri with the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
So Aaron Schwartz was someone who got caught up with some CFAA charges and faced a significant prison sentence, almost 35 years in prison if he received the full maximum. Essentially what his crime was he accessed JSTOR, which is an academic database, even though he had permission to access the database as a result of his affiliation with Harvard University. He basically accessed that information in a way he wasn't supposed to access it. Rather than taking the files one at a time, which is what he was only allowed to do by the terms of service of JSTOR, he downloaded them in bulk. Prosecutors went after him under the CFAA and went after him very aggressively. Again, that he faced a significant prison sentence. And, you know, it's always hard to speculate what causes another person to take their own life. And I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, one of the motivating factors that many of his closest friends and confidants and his attorneys have said is that he faced a lot of pressure in challenging the case. And apparently, you know, that pressure kind of was too much for him to bear, as well as whatever else was going on in his personal life, and he unfortunately took his life as a result. But I think, you know, the big problem is that the CFAA creates a structure where a person can look at anything from a few months in prison to years in prison, and that discretion about how to get that sentence is really kind of comes down to what the prosecutor wants to pursue and what the judge is willing to impose. And unfortunately, the CFAA gives prosecutors a lot of discretion in assessing how that sentence should be calculated, and that gives them power to pressure defendants into pleading guilty. Again, you know, with Aaron Schwartz, it was, you know, plead and get a few months in jail and a felony, or if you go to trial, we're going to look at a seven-year prison sentence for you.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation has called on Congress to change the CFAA so it will no longer unfairly target internet activists and to reduce the mandatory minimum sentences for computer fraud. You can find more information on the work of the Electronic Frontier Foundation at their website, EFF.org. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg reporting.
The international hacker network Anonymous published a video communique today directed at the far-right anti-immigrant group known as the English Defense League. The hackers say that they will soon post the personal details of English Defense League members and supporters. More than 1,000 members of the English Defense League held a rally near Downing Street in London on Sunday. They pledged to retaliate against British Muslims for the brutal murder of a British soldier by two deranged individuals claiming to be Muslims last week. A video statement posted on YouTube in the name of Anonymous UK accused the English Defense League of using the killing of drummer Lee Rigby to spread a campaign of hate and bigotry throughout the UK.
Despite the EU's efforts to decrease carbon emissions, Hamill points out that this process actually works against their goal.
There's two big problems with grinding up trees and burning them to generate electricity. And the first problem is that burning whole trees to generate electricity actually increases carbon emissions. The policies that are driving this in Europe have been put in place to reduce carbon emissions over the short term to address global climate issues. And in fact, the fact that these policies recognize biomass as carbon neutral are actually increasing carbon emissions over the short term.
The logging companies mainly target the southeastern forests, and Hamill spoke to the potential effects of this in the area.
The logging associated with cutting down these whole trees to produce pellets is very damaging. We have documented evidence that they are logging trees in wetland hardwood forests in the U.S. Southeast. These are areas that contain some of the greatest diversity of freshwater wetland communities on the continent. The South is home to more plant and animal species than anywhere else in North America. So the fact that they are logging these whole trees in these wetland hardwood forests are having devastating impacts on the ecosystems there.
Hamill also outlined some of the goals for the campaign.
Our goals are really for these companies, and that includes large pellet manufacturers in the Southeast, the leading of which is Enviva. They are the largest pellet manufacturer in North America and leading the export of pellets to the EU. So we're focused on getting Enviva as well as some of the largest utilities in Europe, in particular Drax, who is purchasing pellets from Enviva, to put a moratorium on the use of whole trees. There needs to be adequate policies in place to ensure that they're reducing carbon emissions compared to fossil fuels, and as I've said, burning whole trees does not do that. And they need to have adequate policies in place to ensure that the logging is not adversely impacting forests, which we know it is.
More information can be found on the NRDC website. For KBOO News, I'm Audrey Davis.
I'm sorry, we're experiencing technical difficulties. That was the audio for... That was Audrey Davis speaking with Debbie Hamill, the Senior Resource Specialist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, regarding the Our Forests Aren't Fuel campaign. And now we go to the audio for the Anonymous Hackers Challenge English Defense.
Last week, an innocent drummer, Lee Rigby, lost his life at the hands of two vile and demented human beings in the most horrific and heinous manner ever witnessed on the streets of Britain. This villainous public display has thrown the United Kingdom into mourning, every community, and every congregation, extending their deepest condolences. You, however, have used this as another excuse to further spread your campaign of hate, bigotry, and misinformation. Under the guise of national pride, you have instigated crimes against the innocent and incited the subjugation of Muslims. We will not allow your injustices, your lies, and your stupidity to further radicalize our youth into fearing and despising their fellow man. Our people are desperate for hope. In a hopeless society where our own government neglects us, where society has failed us, it is only natural.